Labas and good afternoon. This is Kęstutis Deividas, and you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial and, of course, live streaming audio over the internet at ktym.com. Thanks again for tuning in to Independent Lithuanian Radio this afternoon. Hot enough for you? Oh, my goodness. You know, remember back, what was it, April or first week of May, we had like 105-degree heat wave in the greater Los Angeles area. And it, like, popped up over 100 for a day or two and then dropped right away to like 68. Anyway, it's the real deal. It's summertime. So much more of this to come. And as usual, we bring you up to date on the weather in Lithuania. And now these temperatures start looking really nice. It's going to be 73 degrees in Vilnius tomorrow under partly cloudy skies. And the capital city will have a low of 50 degrees overnight. And then Monday it'll be 69, and then back up to 74 on Tuesday, and topping out at 77 for the extended forecast through July 7th, 2013, in the capital of Lithuania, Vilnius. We're not going to cover any local community events right now. It's summertime. It's pretty slow. And, you know, people are going on vacations and on trips to Lithuania, and we've got some very important and some tragic news to share with you today from and about Lithuania. We'll start with a headline story, and that is the fact that Lithuania, if you haven't heard yet, is going to be the head of rotating presidency of the European Union. In other words, Lithuania takes center stage. The eyes and ears of Europe and the world will be turned to Lithuania for the next 6 months as the country takes over the presidency of the Council of the European Union in a historic first for the Baltic country beginning July 1st. That's Monday. Many of EU's most important decisions will go through Vilnius. This represents a major achievement for the country and its citizens. Speaking about the benefits of the upcoming presidency, Lithuanian President Dalia Grybauskaitė said that it will open up invaluable opportunities for the country. Quote, after 9 years of EU membership, we can test our capacities and demonstrate that we are not only good members of the European family, but also excellent neighbors. The presidency also means enhancing the country's visibility and awareness and should give a boost to the economy. More than 200 various meetings will take place in Lithuania, with around 30,000 participants to attend, she said. Permanent representative of Lithuania, Ambassador Raimundas Karoblis, speaking at an event organized by Belgian, German, and Lithuanian think tanks in Brussels earlier this month, said, quote, the presidency is an opportunity for Lithuania to contribute to the future of Europe, as well as a chance to increase its visibility and demonstrate that it can lead the legislative process as efficiently as other member states. Lithuania will focus on pursuing a credible, growing, and open Europe, the country's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Linas Linkevičius, said at the launch event of the official guide to the Lithuanian EU Council presidency. The Council of European Union is one of the most important European institutions that, together with the Parliament and the European Commission, contributes to the legislative process in Europe. The holder of the presidency changes every 6 months. The Council works on ratifying EU legislation, coordinates the general economic policies of member countries, approves the annual EU budget, develops foreign and defense policies, and submits pacts between Europe and other countries, among other duties. Every member country's government has a representative in the EU Council. The leading issues on Lithuania's agenda will include a focus on employment and social policy, energy security, and financial stability. Numerous other items crowd the agenda as well, including Eastern Partners Relations, Home Affairs Implementation of Various Programs, Effective Management of the EU External Border, the Fight Against Terrorism and Organized Crime. On June 20th in Luxembourg at the EPSCO Council meeting, Lithuanian Minister of Social Security and Labor, Algimanta Pabedinskienė, introduced the main priorities in the field of employment and social policy. The minister said that the main emphasis will be on the reduction of youth unemployment, which continues to be a major challenge for most EU member states. Better protection of workers, including migrant workers, is another priority area for Lithuania. And in the area of equal rights between men and women and anti-discrimination, Lithuania will seek an agreement in the Council on the directive on improving the gender balance among non-executive directors of companies listed on stock exchanges and related measures. On energy security in the EU, one goal is to eliminate what are known as energy islands. Efforts will as well be made to create a functioning internal energy market in order to guarantee energy self-sufficiency within the Union and that no member state remains isolated from European energy networks after 2015. Energy resources also should be available at reasonable prices. To stress the importance of this, the European Council has agreed to create the Connecting Europe facility, which will be an important new instrument in expanding Europe's energy infrastructure inside and across national borders. One of the most important duties Lithuania has will be in gaining approval of the next EU budget, which is planned for 7 years, with the present budget expiring at the end of 2013. Ambassador Karoblis confirms that the EU multi-annual budget for the next 7 years is one of the main presidency priorities. He expressed hope that the current Irish presidency of the Council will reach political agreement, opening doors for Lithuania to focus on adopting more than 70 pieces of legislation essential for the money to flow to the EU-financed initiatives. Regarding a credible Europe, Lithuania, quote, will strive to make progress towards sounder public finances in the EU and to strengthen the ground for financial stability, which is required to fully restore the EU's economic credibility. Concerning a growing Europe, Lithuania plans to focus on further deepening and integrating the single market as the main driving force for economic growth and better employment opportunities, including completion of the initiatives for the Single Market Act. Lithuania takes over the presidency from Ireland. The president, Grybauskaitė, says that, quote, we will build on the Irish achievement in tackling the problems that occupy all Europeans the most. But consensus between political forces will be the key to success for Lithuania's presidency, she stressed during a meeting with members of committees and on foreign and European affairs back on June 20th. What's this mean for the man on the street? Well, Laima Andrikienė, member of the EU Parliament, said this. Lithuania will be the first of the three Baltic sisters, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, to hold the EU presidency since joining the EU in May of 2004. For my homeland, Lithuania, which regained its independence in 1990, 23 years ago, after being occupied by the Soviet Union for 50 years, the presidency of the EU Council is also a learning exercise. Lithuanians will explore an opportunity to understand Europe better and to present our objectives under the EU rules of the game, to initiate change, and for 6 months to ensure the smooth running of the European Union. I wish Lithuania to lead the EU Council in a professional and effective, results-orientated way. So Lithuania is now in the spotlight, considering that already on July 5th, another historic event takes place to mark the beginning of Lithuania's presidency, namely that all members of the European Commission will visit Lithuania for the first time to discuss the key issues of the presidency. At least Lithuania knows it will have the support of all its fellow EU members. So once again, Lithuania will be in the presidency of the EU Council starting on Monday, July 1st, and tens of thousands of people, and of course many of them unfortunately bureaucrats of one type or another, but anyway, will be visiting Lithuania for the first time, and if not the first time, they will certainly be spending more significant time in Lithuania and learning much about its people and its culture, and perhaps take into consideration the nuances of a small country like Lithuania. The nuances when it comes to religious issues, when it comes to morality, everything from abortion to gay rights, and the concerns of a people who have suddenly had a secular Europe thrust upon them that not everyone quite understands nor agrees with. So it's an important time for Lithuania, going both ways. Lithuanians will find out more about what being European now means to what we'll call the old Europe or the West. And the old Europe will find out that the East is not the backwater they might have once thought it was. I'll be right back. And as we said in the beginning of the show, we have some tragic news to share. The body of Lithuanian climber Ernestas Markšaitis, who was killed in Pakistan, is being flown back to Vilnius right now. As a matter of fact, if everything went well, his body should have already landed in Vilnius, according to Foreign Minister Linas Linkevičius. Now the details as we know them at this point in time. Sauntering among Gediminas Avenue or through Cathedral Square in the center of Vilnius can be more precarious than mountaineering in the Himalayas, says a convinced and prominent Lithuanian mountaineer, Vladas Vitkauskas, after news broke out that Ernestas Markšaitis, also a famous Lithuanian mountaineer, was killed on the 23rd of June by a Taliban fighter in Pakistan. The slain Lithuanian had just started ascending Nangar Parbat Mountain, which in Sanskrit means naked mountain. Quote, walking down Gediminas Avenue is more dangerous than mountaineering in the Himalayas. That's what I really believe. I've never ever heard of a murder in the mountaineer's camp, says Vitkauskas. The insurgents usually do not care about foreign mountaineers, but wage their furor against what they deem infidels. But the bottom line is this. It is not the mountains or wild animals that pose the danger. It is always people. Vitkauskas' son was killed while mountaineering in the Tatra Mountains in a snow avalanche in 2010. So the mountains can be a very treacherous place anyway. Located in Baltistan, in the Gilgit-Baltistan region of Pakistan, Nanga Parbat is one of the 8,000ers, that's what it's known as by climbers, with a summit elevation of 8,126 meters. Basically, it's over 25,000 feet tall, an immense dramatic peak rising far above its surrounding terrain. And again, just to put this in perspective, ladies and gentlemen, that would be twice as high as the tallest mountain in the continental United States, which is Mount Whitney right here in California at about 14,000, more than twice, about twice as high, okay? So anyway, back to the story. It is a dramatic peak, notoriously difficult to climb. Numerous mountaineering deaths in the early and mid-20th century gave it the nickname of Killer Mountain. But ironically, Markšaitis, the 44-year-old mountaineer, and nine other climbers who have conquered hundreds of peaks. It is not the mountain, but human beings hiding in caves and ravines that have turned out to be the most insidious. Gunmen came and opened fire on them. It is confirmed that they have been killed, police official Mohammed Navid told international news agencies. Though the Taliban attack was called as an unprecedented attack in a normally peaceful Himalayan region, the ambush has spotlighted violence just weeks after a new civilian Pakistani government took office, one that vowed to quell the militancy. A couple of years ago, Markšaitis was acknowledged as the best Lithuanian mountaineer. The late Markšaitis, it's actually Markšaitis, contrary to misconceptions about mountaineering, was not a daredevil type. one who snubbed life and safety. On the contrary, he always took precautions before setting foot on any mountain. There are many dangers everywhere, therefore it is important to properly manage and important to foresee them. But sometimes one does everything to make sure about safety, but to envision everything is difficult. Now these words sound like a premonition. An omen had perhaps rung up at the beginning of the year when he barely escaped death in a heavy blizzard in the Alps. But the biggest warning from the Himalayas itself also came last year when a terrorist ambush and 25 people, including mountaineers, were killed. Mark Schreitis was then descending from the world's second highest peak, known as K2, and wasn't in the wrong place at that time. But now the mountain killers have made up for this in a twisted way. Few would suspect that a serene, tranquil, and eternity-exuding mountain was, after many crackdowns by officials, still teeming with Taliban fighters. Mark Schreitis, the seasoned mountaineer, perhaps didn't weigh this even as a remote possibility either, but undoubtedly he was well aware that this killer mountain claims every six climber's life. Okay, one out of six people die. And there were warning signposts at the foot of the mountain. Look to your left, to the mountain killer. When Mark Schreitis, along with other mountaineers, had made the first 4 kilometers up the mountain to the first campsite, there was as yet no premonition of a looming tragedy. On the contrary, the weather was crisp. The panorama was, they said, mesmerizing. On Saturday evening, some 20 semi-automatic gun-brandishing killers were prowling up the slope towards the camp. When the ambush occurred, some of the camping mountaineers managed to flee. Mark Schreitis was among 9 other trekkers to have been killed. Beside him, there were 3 Ukrainians, 2 Slovaks, 2 Chinese, a Nepalese, and an American of Chinese descent. Another group of the Nangar Parbat Peak conquerors had already climbed to a higher camp. No need to say that the fact that they did that saved their lives. Among them was Saulius Damulavičius, another Lithuanian. After news of the bloody strike broke out, Mark Schreitis' family and friends comforted each other that the mountains had been again merciful to Mark Schreitis. "Daddy, I hope you are okay. Write me, please, when you're able to," Laura, his daughter, pleaded on Facebook Sunday. Neither she nor her daughter Karina have received a reply. The last time they heard from their dad was June 4th, when the mountaineers could still access the internet. "We are about to set out for Chile and thereafter to Nanga Parbat," he tersely wrote. Later he posted online a picture of himself and fellow climber Damulavičius with their heads shaved. "New Islamabad haircuts," they joked. To get a last-minute update on the mountain, Mark Schreitis called up a Pakistani mountaineer who over the years had become a friend. "I couldn't dream in my worst nightmare that it would be his last call." Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I've been quoting from a human interest piece in the Baltic Times. I'm going to go back now, since we're running short on time, to the basic news story as headlined on June 24th. Okay, quote, "Gunmen overran a mountaineering base camp and shot dead 4 trekkers who were resting during a climb up one of the world's tallest peaks. The attackers, who were dressed as paramilitary Gilgit scouts, killed 10 foreign climbers, including Chinese and Ukrainian nationals, and their Pakistani cook at the foot of Nanga Parbat, the 9th tallest peak in the world. Interestingly, 2 outlawed militant groups claimed responsibility for the base camp shootings near Kudgali in the Gilgit-Baltistan region. Quote, 11 people were killed in the attack that took place in Punernula near the base camp, Deputy Inspector of Police Ali Sher told Express Tribune, without disclosing the nationalities of the victims. However, other officials identified the victims as 2 Chinese, 1 Chinese-American, 3 Ukrainians, 2 Slovakians, 1 Lithuanian, 1 Nepalese, and their Pakistani cook. Matt Boland, acting spokesman for the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad, confirmed that an American citizen had been killed in the attack and extended condolences to the families of innocent tourists. The gunman shot dead a Pakistani cook with the tourist and held other workers at gunpoint, a senior official of the government told Reuters. A Chinese climber managed to escape. The federal interior minister said the security forces, using military helicopters, had retrieved the Chinese national who was later shifted to a safe place. The other guide was also arrested and is currently under investigation. The gunman held the staff hostage and then started killing foreign tourists before making their escape. Once again, the attackers, according to the Interior Minister, were dressed as Gilgit scouts and reached the area by abducting two guides. One guide was killed in the shootout. One is alive. He is now detained and being questioned. The area where the incident occurred is unmanned and is at a two-day hike from Chilas, the headquarters of Damir Valley, where the peak is located, said police officials. As stated before, there were conflicting claims of responsibility. Sectarian extremist group Jundula, with a track record of attacks in the area, was the first to say that it was them behind the raid. Quote, "These foreigners are our enemies, and we proudly claim responsibility for them and will continue such attacks in the future," said a Jundula spokesman. Later, the Tehrik-i-Taliban Pakistan group said that it had shot the trekkers in retaliation for a U.S. drone strike in May that killed the group's second command. Quote, "Of our factions, Junad-ul-Hifsa did it. It is to avenge the killing of our commander, Walyur Rehman," said spokesman and Sanullah Ehsan. He added that Junad-ul-Hifsa was the new wing set up by the Tehrik-i-Taliban Pakistan to attack, quote, "foreigners and convey a message to the world against drone strikes." Now, government spokesman in Pakistan called this an attack on Pakistan. Quote, "The objective behind this attack appeared to tarnish our image and discourage tourism in Pakistan," Interior Ministry spokesman told journalists after retrieving the bodies of the foreign trekkers. The ambassadors of China and Ukraine and senior officials of Nepal and Russian embassies were present at the airbase to take possession of the bodies. Condemning these inhuman and cruel acts, as it was put, Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif ordered a thorough investigation and called for the perpetrators to be brought to justice. It was the first time foreign tourists had been attacked in the GB, where the convergence of the Hindu Kush, Karakoram, and Himalayan ranges has created a stunning landscape explored by only a few of the most intrepid mountaineers. The deaths call into question the future of foreign mountaineering and trekking expeditions, which provide the last vestige of international tourism in a country reeling from a bloody Taliban insurgency. Once again, the body of Lithuanian climber Ernestas Markšaitis, which was killed in Pakistan this last week at age 45, is being flown back to Vilnius this Saturday after being murdered, killed, on a mountaineering trip in Pakistan. Well, before we go, we have time for a couple of short stories. Lithuanian President Dalia Grybauskaitė on Friday refused to comment on Vilnius authorities' recent decision to ban a gay march through central Vilnius through Gediminas Avenue. This story just repeats itself all the time. Quote, "I would definitely not want to comment on the municipality's responsibility," she told journalists in Brussels when asked whether the march through Gediminas Avenue should be allowed. And for those of you who may not be clear, Gediminas Avenue is the huge promenade walk street that ends or begins at the cathedral and runs through the city up to the Parliament building and the park where Lenin's statue used to stay in the KGB museum. So if you can envision that, it is not an old town. It is, you know, from the front of the cathedral, the extension that goes all the way back, and the front part of it, the part in front of the cathedral is a walk street. It's close to traffic, and later on it will take automobiles. Anyway, she doesn't want to comment on that. According to Grybauskaitė, the court ruling means that, quote, "the municipality is responsible for agreeing," quote, with those interested in holding any marches. Court rulings must be executed and an agreement must be reached, and the location and everything else is the result of negotiations of the two parties, the president said. Vilnius authorities on Wednesday refused to allow a gay march through central Gediminas Avenue in late July, citing security problems. problems. The municipality said in a statement that, quote, there's a strong possibility that incidents may repeat despite police involvement, and there may also be a threat to public order, morality, and public security. Prime Minister Algirdas Butkevičius on Wednesday refused to comment on the issue also, saying that it's the issue of competence of politicians from Vilnius municipality. The Lithuanian Gay League pledged to appeal. It has already won one appeal case after a court ordered Vilnius authorities to review its decision to allow a gay march only through Upes Street a bit further from central Vilnius. The position of Vilnius authorities was also condemned by Amnesty International. The march is planned for July 27th. The first gay march in Lithuania took place in 2010, which was also preceded by court hearings on the march location and permission to hold it. The march itself took place eventually, with several hundred people marching through a heavily guarded territory in the presence of around 1,000 protesters. Finally here, despite Lithuania is cited as the least sexist in the EU, in the European Union. Least sexist. Let's share the story here. Despite the European Union requirement that wages for the same work by women and men have to be equal, in practice, a wage gap between genders exists in all EU countries. Women's wages, on the average, are 16% lower. The EU ministers discussed these tendencies, gender equality, and the situation of women in the 5th Congress of Women in Warsaw, Poland, on June 14th. Minister of Social Security and Labor, Algimanta Pabedinskienen, noted that the issue of men's and women's rights in the labor market will be raised during Lithuania's presidency of the EU, which begins Monday. However, the gap between men's and women's income in Lithuania is not as big as it is in other countries. The income difference in Lithuania stands at just under 12%, lower than the EU average. Employment rates are almost equal for both genders, with male unemployment slightly higher. In 2012, male unemployment stood at 15.1%, while female was at 11.5%. Well, ladies and gentlemen, before we go, we want to remind you that Euro Delimart Lituanica is open 7 days. It's at the corner of Santa Monica Boulevard and Yale. That's 2838 Santa Monica Boulevard, 28 blocks from the beach, where you'll find a nice selection of Lithuanian food products. Support those who support us. This is Kestutis Deividas for Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. Thanks again for tuning in. And once again, our condolences go out to Ernestas Markšaitis' family. May he rest in peace. Bye-bye.